This is the beginning of class 2.
Sasi bhagi jushin eto sham viravin shinyande yampati sangye shindu mitte uvahi jogo nanda shimha
quickly and your lights start working too well and you think it's a squirrel and you slam on the brake. That's not a non-pramana. You're at work and you don't like somebody else and you think they're always out to get you and something happens and you think they started it but they didn't have anything to do with it. And or you think your girlfriend's messing around because you're jealous. And it's just because of the effect of your emotion that that something which has nothing to do with what you think is going on truly seems to be going on. And those are all non-prominent. Those are all nonsense. But 99% of what you have are semi, are prominent. So today, the first thing we're going to talk about is why you need prominent. What's the use of prominent? And then, there we get into a thing called the three levels of reality. And I'm going to give you a chart about it. I'm going to give it to you in Tibetan and in English. Okay, this is the, there's two pages. And just make sure you get both pages, okay? That's kind of confusing. Right. Here's the same chart in English. You have to pull out. Hey, Mungyur.
Mungyur.
Shintoku. We're in a different school. And we mostly, right now, are in South Antarctica school and lower mind illness. Don't worry about it. Okay. Mungyur means those objects in the world which are evident. obvious. Lungyur means those things which you can perceive directly without any problem at all. So, the classic example is colors and shapes. Colors are lungyur. Okay? This blue, this white, this yellow, those are all lungyur. Most of the objects of your senses, all of the objects of your senses are lungyur. Okay? Touches are lungyur. Sounds are lungyur. Right? And your own thoughts to you are lungyur. You don't have a problem perceiving them. They are very obvious, evident. That's Lunga. Gokyur means hidden. Gokyur. That which is. So the whole word Gokyur means that which is hidden. Things which are hidden. An example of a Gokyur object, the classical example, is emptiness. It's a hidden object. A normal person can't perceive emptiness except by what?
Deduction,
reasoning. I can explain emptiness to you, and based on that explanation, within about a half an hour, you can have a pramana towards emptiness. Can you see you've perceived emptiness? Yes. Can you say you've perceived it directly? No. Is there a difference? Oh. A zillion miles difference. And that's a long story. But you can perceive emptiness intellectually. And that emptiness is spoken. When you perceive something through reasoning, intellectually, by thinking something out, emptiness intellectually. And that emptiness is spoken. When you perceive something through reasoning, intellectually, by thinking something out, that thing is gokyur. Another example of a gokyur object is subtle impermanence. Subtle impermanence. There's two levels of impermanence. One is what we call gross impermanence, and that's where you see somebody's Cadillac hit a fire hydrant. Or, you know, where you drop a glass and it breaks. That's gross impermanence. That's not gokyur. But when you perceive, when you meditate for a long time, and then you're able to see that things are being destroyed by the instinct, that nothing lasts more than an instinct, that's subtle impermanence. So at some point you can perceive that. That's gokyur. It's very difficult to perceive. You cannot perceive it with your senses. If you cannot see with your eyes the subtle impermanence of you or your relationships or your family, or which are all disintegrating in front of your eyes and you can't see it. That's subtle impermanence. Shindu Gokyur. Shindu means what it sounds like. What does Shindu mean? Shindu Gokyur. It means very or deeply hidden. Okay, very, very hidden. It's extremely hidden. Shindu Gokyur. In Tibetan, these are ancient words, but still in modern day Tibetan you say, Shindu Nine Kupare. He's an incredible fool. Shindu Nine means that. Same, it still has the same meaning. Okay, so deeply hidden. What object is more profound or more inscrutable than emptiness?
Karma.
The subtle workings of karma. You know, the very subtle mechanisms of karma are Shindu Gokyur. They're more difficult to perceive directly than emptiness is. That's where a Buddha can come. I like to use this tanka as an example. A Buddha can come to this tanka and he can explain why this thing goes to the left, and why this purple part goes to the right, and why this is a little circle and not a square, and why there's 43 threads in here and not 44. And those are all... A Buddha can explain, he can see directly everything that's behind everything around you. You know, Why are two guys in a car and one dies when the car hits the bridge and the other survives? I think it was the three Mets last year in a motorhome. Went under a dock at night. So two of them get decapitated and one survives. And he's fine, he's pitching now, you know. So why? You know, and they were trying to explain why, you know, the boat rocked at the last minute, or, I mean, the answer is karma. You know, why does one guy survive and why two don't? This is a child's question. You know, you don't ask a question like that. Or you say the boat tipped and he was on the right, but why was he on the right? You know, why wasn't he on the other side that didn't tip? And why didn't he get his head cut off? You know, this is, those are all, they all have a reason. They all have something behind them. Westerners have this very interesting prejudice, you know. They say everything has a cause. They're scientists. They say everything has a cause. So then a kid says, well, why did one guy die in the accident and the other two didn't? You know? And they say, well, so really what we're doing is we're dividing reality into two parts. Things that we say don't have a cause and things that we say do have a cause. And when a kid comes up and says, why did the one guy survive? You say, well, there's no reason. Maybe the boat tipped or something. And if the kid says, why did the boat tip for him? There's no answer. You say, that doesn't have a cause. But really, we're not scientists. We're not rational. We say that doesn't, we're saying that doesn't have a cause. It's irrational. It's sick. I mean, it's stupid. We say everything else has a cause, but not those things. It's not right.
Well, the Lord works in strange ways.
No, there is. Everything must have a cause. You can't exclude some things and say they don't have a cause.
But, you know, Buddhist. They never really explain how the world came about, say, karma.
No, no, fourth chapter, third chapter, I'm down, I can give. Lele jiken na toke. Lele kama na lele. That's the, it starts like that. It's very famous. We'll get into that. In fact, we're going to reach that in this class. So those subtle workings of karma are, I didn't say 4 years ago, right? Are something only a Buddha can see. And those are Shintokyo. So you have three levels of reality. To perceive this level of reality, it's in front of your face. This level of reality, you must think. You must consider reasons. You have to think it over. You have to think it out. And to perceive this level of reality, basically you have to take someone's authority. You have to take it on authority. No matter how much you think. By thinking, I can help you, and I will. I want to. The teachings on karma are reasonable. And especially the explanation of the mind-only school about karma, if you learn it, it's quite plausible. You can buy it right away, if you learn it properly. But no matter what thought process you go through at your level, if you are who you seem to be, that I have no idea because of last class, right? You can't see it, except you can just hear the Buddha explain it, and then you can perceive it based on his explanation. And that's a tricky question, and we'll get into that. You know, what conditions have to be present for you to buy it when some being, even Gautama Buddha, says, this is true, you have to take my word for it. Are there any circumstances where a Buddhist can accept that? We'll get into that. But the subtle workings of karma are something that basically you can only perceive at our level based on a higher being's work, on his description of something that we can't see. So the idea is, we are very interested about the hidden objects. You know, you live in a world where you believe what you see and you believe what you hear. And those things are pretty much airtight. They're all correct. Pretty much sema. Pretty much prana. When we get into this realm, where you start using your reasoning to perceive things, that's where most of the trouble and that's where most of the conflict in the world comes from. Because people don't follow the rules of reasoning. I mean, we're all logicians. Every moment at work, you are drawing deductions. Every morning, you know, when you're in the office and you're working, you're constantly drawing conclusions, and most of them are true. And that's, the things you're drawing conclusions about are kokyo. Like I was in Bombay. There's a guy in a factory there. The production's not coming out. My boss is mad. You know, I'm trying to guess why he's not doing it. Maybe he doesn't have the diamonds. Maybe he doesn't have the workers. Maybe he's got another customer. You know, I'm doing that's kokier for me. That's hidden for me. I don't know why he's not doing it. So I'm basing all these, I'm making speculations based on what I think, but I don't really know. So that in that realm you get in trouble. But the point is that there is a whole category of objects in your world. There are objects in the universe which are kosher, which are hidden. And first of all, you have to understand that they do, you have to guess that there should be things like that. There are certain objects in the world that are kosher for you. You can't see them now. There's a whole big bag of very important things in the universe that are hidden to you. Can you see them? You know, can you ever get some kind of a way of like a kind of wisdom where now you can see those things which you couldn't see before? That's the whole study of karma. That's why you're studying karma. You're trying to see if you can develop some sixth sense by which you can see kokyo. That's the whole idea. It's very interesting. You're trying to develop a new mental tool by which you can see that big group of things in the universe which to you right now are hidden. You can't see them. Yeah.
So, I need an example. Are you talking about something like spirit?
Well, let's say emptiness. By the way, that is an example. In debating, it's one of the prime examples. Something like that. It's a big debate. You know, do spirits exist? You know, are there these spirits around us that we can't see? That's kokyo for you. That's a kokyo object.
That's proven.
Now, is that important thing to perceive? It's pretty important because it would help you establish past lives, future lives, other beings. But the main objects we're trying to establish are nirvana. You know, is nirvana, does it exist? Does Buddhahood exist? Does a Buddha exist? And is there a method by which a normal American person within a few years could reach that state?
Of hard work.
No, it's a very interesting question. You know, those are the three questions I pose. You know, is there such a thing as nirvana by which you would never suffer again? Is there such a thing as Buddhahood by which you could reach a state where you know every object in the universe at one moment and could help every other person that exists? And is it possible for a normal person like us, by using some standard, plain old process of a few things, reach that place? You know, is it possible? It's very interesting. It's very beautiful. If it is, then there's a reason to come to this class. If there's not, then there's no reason to come to this class. I mean, sometimes I go to Dharma classes and they sound like pop psychology class. They, you know, like, feel good and be you're all right and, you know, work it out with your family and this will help you with your life. And not the point, you know. Those are the goals. The goals are to reach a state where you don't suffer ever again. And then secondly, where you reach a state of perfection and you can help other people. And then thirdly, is there a normal sequence of steps that if you do these 10 things and you're just a normal American person, you can reach those places? You can actually become those things. If it's possible. Those are all kokyo. That's the whole idea of studying karma. That's the goal of studying karma. You know, is to try to establish whether or not a normal person, by following a short list of steps, can reach a state where he has no suffering or no death. That's very interesting. All right. Now I ask a question, and I thought he was going to ask me that. Are these in Tibetan, in the debate system, you debate it all the time. Are these three mutually exclusive? Can anything be in more than one of these categories? I had this debate at Gandhi, I'll never forget it. Like the 20-month document. Yeah.
It depends on your level, right? I mean, it's
absolutely. That's the perfect answer. And these are not object dependent, they are subject dependent. Mm. They depend on the person. To whom? Okay, if I ask you, you know, is yellow kokyo or mungyo? Is yellow a hidden object? Is it difficult to perceive? Or is it obvious? Which one is it?
It's both.
You should ask me for whom. For a blind man, it's kokyo. For a blind man, it's hidden. He needs deduction to perceive the yellow on this wall. And in fact, if he's like an alien from another planet who's also blind, he needs the Shinto kokyo. You know, there's a children's book, Wrinkle in Time, beautiful book. And they meet somebody from another realm, and it's a children's story. And they don't have colors in their realm, so the children are trying to explain colors to these people. And they would have to take their children's word for it. That's Shinto kokyo. It's totally out of their experience. There's no way they can establish it except by taking someone's word for it. So even color, even the most obvious thing in the world can be Shinto kokyo, you know, deeply hidden. But what about subtle workings of this, of karma? Can they ever be mungyo? Can they ever be all
Buddha? Sure.
Yeah, Buddha doesn't even have deduction, a deductive karma. He doesn't, everything he perceives is direct. He sees all objects directly. That's his quality. And past, present, and future, all corners of the universe, simultaneously.
Buddha has no sense of deduction, or what? No deduction.
He has no need for it. He can imagine it, and he can, you know, he knows how to act like he's doing it, but he perceives all objects directly at the same time. So they're not mutually exclusive.
That would be like in your example of the tanka. If the Buddha looked at the tanka and saw the...
Yeah, he just sees it's cool. You know, he looks at the tanka and he sees that Tom Kiley 3,000 years ago moved his hand that way instead of that way. Mm-hmm. And that's why this thing is like that.
So in other words, the two Buddhas looking at the tanka, one would look at it and say, oh, that square up there was a real hot day 300 million years ago. And the other one says, yeah, windy too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To them it's very up
just,
front. Not hidden at all.
They say it's like a marble in their hand, like an olive in the palm of their hand.
But you use the word see.
Yeah.
You don't mean that.
That's the verb. The Buddha has a quality, which I'm not going to get into. That's it's in the Abhisamankara in the last chapter. We'll study that someday. But a Buddha can see the whole universe with his finger.
See it.
See.
Does he have eyes then?
Yeah, and he can smell with his eyes. That's the quality of Buddha. It's in the 8th chapter of the Abhisamaka. And a Buddha wrote it, so but that's another stuff. Okay, say Munsum Sema.
Munsum Sema.
Jepak Sema.
Jepak Sema.
Munsum Sema.
Munsum Sema.
Jepak Sema.
Jepak Sema.
Muslim Sema means direct Sema, direct Pramana, direct correct perception. And it's the kind of perception you need to perceive one of yours. So it connects with reality level number one. Okay? You need direct perception to perceive obvious objects.
Is that the same as three?
No. No relation to that. Different spelling. But a lot of people get, even Tibetans get confused about it.
You need this for number one, or yeah. Number one needs this for this?
Perception, direct perception's job is to perceive obvious objects.
Can you define direct?
Excuse me?
How do you define direct?
Tough question. A correct perception which does not depend on reasoning. How's that? Or if you say that direct perception, which is utilized to see obvious objects. Those are all definitions.
Yes, we're seeing.
Obvious objects, evident objects, manifest objects. What are examples? For a person at our level, if you are who you seem to be, which I don't know, they would be your eye consciousness, your ear consciousness, the heart sutras, mikne, name, name, sana, nime. Your eye consciousness, your ear consciousness, your nose consciousness, your taste consciousness, and your tactile consciousness. Those are the five. Those are all Nirguna Samsara. Those are all direct perception. Those consciousnesses.
Is there anything beyond them, the sense consciousnesses?
Yeah, there's more. Your mental consciousness, your awareness of your own thoughts, is also a direct perception. You hear your own thoughts constantly. You don't have to use deduction to hear your own thoughts. Sometimes you wish you couldn't hear your own thoughts. Like when you're trying to sleep late at night.
What if your thoughts are wrong?
Your perception of yourself having a stupid thought or a wrong thought, that perception is correct. There is a wrong thought going through in your mind. There does exist a wrong thought in your mind. So the state of mind which perceives the wrong thought in your mind is a samsara. Because that wrong thought does exist, and it is established by that perception.
As a wrong thought.
Yes. Or as a thought going on in my mind before you value about whether it's wrong or right. Still a thought. Now, if in the moments following that, you have a judgmental thought that says this is a correct thought, that's not a samsara. That's not a problem. But the original awareness of the thought is a problem. Because there was a thought there. Whether it was right or wrong, being aware of that thought establishes the existence of that thought.
So you're saying that sema is only about the first one?
No. I'm saying direct sema is only used for our evident objects. What about tonga? The first moments of tonga. Path of seeing. That's called Nyanjara Mursa. Yogic direct perception. Meditative direct perception of emptiness. And that's also Mursa Sema. And for that person at that moment, emptiness is an illusion. Emptiness is an evident object. He's seeing it raw, directly. So for him at that first moment of the path of seeing, that's a direct object. That's an obvious object. Nyanjara Mursa. Nyanjara Mursa. Like Nyanjara Ma. Nyoki Mu. Now to perceive the second two types of reality, the second two levels of reality, to perceive hidden reality, something like emptiness, and to perceive deeply hidden reality, something like the subtle workings of karma, you need Jepaksema. Jepaksema means deductive, correct perception. Reasoning. True reasoning. Correct reasoning. And you use it all day long. Did the pen hit the ground? Yeah. No, and that's deductive perception. And that's hidden for you. The visual part of it, not the audible part. But you did not see the thing. So relative to your eye consciousness, that when it hit the ground, that was hidden for you. You could, because it was blocked by the table, and you made a deduction. You said, I saw it drop out of his hand. Every time I've ever seen something drop out of somebody's hand and they hear a bunk, the thing fell on the floor, And that's, the trick is to understand that you do that all day long, and it's a normal part of your human toolbox, your mental human toolbox, and it works. And your current ability to do that is untrained. You've never had to sit. Your mother didn't sit you down and say, look, when somebody drops a pen, even though you can't see it, you can figure out that the pen hit the ground. You You have an untrained ability. You have the ability that every normal human has to deduce something. And then some people like Einstein, you know, they have, based on the same data, they have a much greater ability to draw a correct conclusion from that. The idea in the study of pramana is to figure out how does that tool of your own mind work, and can you sharpen it? You know, can you study how it works, and then can you find a way to develop it into like more muscular, you know, more a more powerful pramana, a more powerful way of seeing something that you can't see, and then direct it towards those black holes in your knowledge, where nirvana is sitting, where Buddhahood is sitting, and where the path to those is sitting. You know, is it possible for normal human beings to consciously strengthen his own ability to reason, and with that reasoning perceive things which other people around him can't see? That, you know, when you talk about mysticism and Buddhism and blah blah blah, this is really the guts of it. You know, this is where you actually learn to see those things which you other people can't see around you. And that's based on you learn pramana. You learn the rules of pramana, and then you can quite certainly come to see things which you didn't ever expect to be able to see. And if you do it quite consciously, purposely, and that's what Dharmakirti's career was all about. You know, he's trying to tell us how to do that, and you can do it. So you have to learn the rules of pramana. You have to learn about pramana, and that's what we're doing in this class. That's why we're in this class. And it won't be like some mystical thing. It might be just learning to think clearly. And that helps your life, too. I mean, half the time when you get in trouble at work, it's because you drew conclusions that were lousy and weak and flimsy, and you thought you knew something and you didn't know it at all. And that's mostly what personal relationships, when you have a problem, is a lot of it is from faulty, lazy deduction. And you assume the person did something and they didn't do anything like that. But you followed your own lousy deduction, which is not a tema, not a tema. So we're going to study that. That's one of the big things we're going to work on. I think we'll take a break there.
Ah.
First time on time. Because it's a natural place. When we get back, I have a much more confusing thing. So I think I'll make some nice tea. All right, so we'll start again at around 5 after. Kepa.
Kepa.
Dumba.
Dumba.
Deshe Kyobla.
Deshe Kyobla.
Chaktalo.
Chaktalo.
Very, very famous. Very, very famous. These are the opening lines of Dignaga's work. Who's Dignaga?
The author of.
Father of all Buddhist Samadhi. Lived with.
440 AD.
And these are some of the first lines of his text, which is Temakundu, which means compendium of valid perception. These are his opening lines. The pattern reads backwards. Okay? The subject comes last, the verb is right before that. And that's why when you meet the pattern, they say, store going, I am, you know. So chaktal means what? Do you know what chaktal means?
Kastra,
yeah. Chak means hand, and sal means to seek, or to look for something. And chaktal means to bow down. Why? Because when you bow down, you're looking for something from the hand of the lama. And that's why it's called chaktal. In Sanskrit, it's namat, and it means I bow. And it's still in India, they still say namaste. I bow to you. That's how you say hi in Hindi. So, I bow down to what? And there are five parts in this verse that you must learn. What is this verse? This is Dignaga's Chujju. Chujju means when a Buddhist person writes a new book, he's supposed to, at the in the opening lines, bow down to some holy being or object. Like Chandrakirti bows down in the opening lines to Bodhicitta in his Madhyamika text. And Vasubandhu in the Abhidharmakosha bows down to the Buddha. And Maitreya in the Abhisamayalankara bows down to the three knowledges. So Dignaga is bowing down. The person that he's chosen to bow down to at the beginning of his book is the Buddha himself. So this is a short verse that's at the front of almost every Buddhist commentary from ancient India, where they make obeisance to some holy object at the very beginning of the book. And Buddhist books are really beautiful. I mean, there's Guso Churshi. If a book doesn't have four qualities, it's not even a Buddhist book. There has to be some ultimate benefit to it. There has to be some... You don't have to know this, but it disqualifies just about every Western book.
I'm sorry.
If I read the latest novel, it doesn't have a Buddhist book. It has to have some short-term goal, holy goal. It has to have some long-term goal. It has to have some. There has to be some relationship between that long-term goal and the book itself. And then it has to have subject matter. So those are basically a Buddhist book. If it doesn't have some relation to ultimate spiritual goals, it's not considered worthy to read. People won't study it. And if it's faulty, if it had one faulty part in it, they would, in India, they would tie it to the tail of a dog and chase the dog through the street. That's like custom. Yeah.
Could you
like
the word for the dedication?
Yeah. You don't need to know that word. It's just it's very famous. Every book has one. Most of the five great books, all the five great books have one. Dharmakirti is very, very hot, very, very funny. And someday I'll teach it to you. It's very interesting. This is Dignaga. So there are five important parts hidden in here, in this chitta that you have to know. The first is here. It's Temagyurpa. 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 What is Tema? Correct perception. Down perception. Correct perception. That's prominent. Gyurpa means became, turned into. Turned into. Jirpa means turned into. And the Ra in Tibetan, this R here, means into. Turned into Tema. Turned into Tema. In the whole universe, there are only three kinds of changing things. One are mental things, one is physical things, and one are things which are neither, but which are changing. An example of the third would be a person, like Michael. He's not physical, he's not mental. He's a concept, it's an individual. I have a mental part, and I have a physical part, but I'm not those. I'm an idea. I'm an individual. So, Tema Gyurpa, I ask you, is Tema mental, physical, or a person? Is Pramana mental, physical, or a person? Mental stuff, physical stuff, what?
Mental.
It's a state of mind. Correct perception. It's a state of mind. But he's bowing down to the person who became Tema. Which is impossible. A person can't become mental. You can have mental parts, but you can't become a mind. You have a mind. You're not the mind. So, the point is that the word pramana can mean a person who is totally correct. And in that context, that same word can be used for a being who can't make a mistake, who's totally correct, who cannot lie. That's called semikyup. That's called a person who is sema, a person who is pramana. It means he has pramana. It means everything he ever has or ever thinks
he
is pramana.
He
never has a non-pramana. But we call him the pramana. It's just it's an expression. So the Buddha has become sema. The Buddha has become totally correct. He turned into someone who was totally correct. We're going to spend a whole class on the word turned into, jirpa. That's your fourth class. It's very interesting. The idea is that he wasn't that way from the beginning. He was a liar just like us in the beginning.
So is this little phrase here redundant? Does the R at the end of sema mean turned into and jirpa?
It means into. The R means into. And the jirpa means turn. The Dainey grammar case, and we'll study it someday. Sumtak, which is classical Tibetan grammar. Very exciting subject. If you have some spare in a couple of years, we can do it.
Does that mean Buddha or Jirpa?
Normally in a chuja, when you're bowing down to somebody, chuja means an offering of praise. So you're saying, oh, the Buddha, I bow down to the Buddha, who is always correct. Who turned into someone who's always correct. That's the first quality of the Buddha. That's the first thing he's praising. Sema Gyupa. Gola Penche Pa is number two. What is go? You know kind of go? Go means to go. Draw means to go. I'm not teaching it to Ben, but it's just fun. Draw means to go. And as a noun, it means anyone who is going, which means sentient beings. It's another word for sentient beings. Draw la means two sentient beings. To all these goers.
Like
Kundo
also.
Yeah, Kundo means she who goes in the sky.
Kundo.
Huh?
Kundo.
Oh, Tundo means Kundo. Those who go bent over. Diryanch, which is is the Sanskrit and Tibetan word for animal. Dro means going. La means to them. Pan means benefit or help. And pen means benefit or help. Shepa means he wishes or he wants. So I bow down to the person who turned into someone who is totally correct and who basically who loves all beings in an ultimate way. He wants all beings he wants to benefit all beings. He's looking out for everyone. That's Drola Pensha. That's the second quality of the Buddha. According to Dignaga. Dignaga is praising the Buddhist qualities. The third quality that Dignaga is talking about is Dhamma. What's Dhamma? Dhamma Lama is how you remember it. Dhamma means the teacher, capital T. It always refers to the Buddha. The teacher. Dhamma. Deshe. Deshek means sugata, those who have gone to bliss. De means bliss, and shek means gone. And that's a synonym for a Buddha. There's another Deshin Shekpa, which is Tathagata. They're all related. They're all the same. They all refer to the same person.
So
sugata
is a Buddha?
Huh?
Sugata is a Buddha?
Sugata is a Buddha. Su means good, and it's the sva in swastika. Swastika is su astika. Goodness. It means goodness. Kyo. It's number five. Gyok means, what is Gyok Suchi? Gyokdok. Gyokdok. Take refuge. And Gyok means a refuge, a shelter, a person who protects. Protector. Gyok means protector. Gyok La Tafela. I bow down to. La means to. I bow down to the person who became or who turned into a totally correct being. I bow down to the person who has ultimate concern for all sentient beings. I bow down to the person who teaches the path to nirvana and Buddhism. I bow down to the person who has gone to total bliss. And I bow down to the person who can protect other beings. So Dignaga is mentioning five qualities of the Buddha. Those five qualities, Dharmakirti writes half his book about. Based on those two lines, I mean, basically Dharmakirti writes the whole book. And it becomes one of the five greatest books in history, Buddhist history. Just on those two lines. So you can spend, in the monastery, I know you spend 5 years in the winter time on these two lines. Something amazing. And we're going to spend the whole class, the whole course, on this number one, Semmergyepa. So the tema, the pramana that we're going to be talking about, or the one that we're interested in, is the one that refers to the person. The Buddha who is Tema. That's the whole rest of the course is taking off from here. From this first word, Semmergyepa, from this first four syllables. In other words, we're not really going to study pramana. If you want to do that, we'll have another course. That's the first chapter. We're skipping to the second chapter, where they try to prove that the Buddha is Semmergyepa, that the Buddha is pramana, that the Buddha is a person who cannot lie. And a person who is Tema. And that's a big, that takes hundreds of pages. I mean, in the root text, in the commentary, we're going to try to prove or show or discuss this quality of the Buddha. And that will lead us to the proof of future lives. Eventually. It's very interesting. It's very, and it takes you by way of proving that an omniscient being could not create the world. We'll get to that in the fifth class. That's an interesting... And you know, there weren't any Christians around at that time to pick on. It was just... there was a school at that time that believed that. So he just tried to describe how that could be. But the main thing is to prove how are you going to perceive things that you can't see right now. This is a little thing that the Tibetan class, some of the more advanced students in the other class are starting to try to translate stuff. And it's all things that relate to what we're doing. So I asked them, you know, a different person is doing a few pages each week. And then they're typing it out in English. And then what we'd like you guys to do is critique it. It's a very rough, very lousy, in fact. It's the first one they ever did. So, you know, read it, mark it out, and it will go to Eric Kalamra, who did this one. And then Sarah Layden did the next one. That's being typed up now. And Sister Pinzo did the third one. He's over there talking it now. I don't have enough for everybody, but if you're a person who would care to help, take one.
Okay, this is Homer. Finished a little early.
What? That's it? That's all there is?
A two-question quiz.
And a no-question quiz. Anything happens around here in the way of putting up things and Stillwell usually does it all. Because nobody else knows how to do it.
Supposed to be modest.
Michael, are these things that are marked in the parentheses, are they part of the text, or is that the translator adding an explanation? I mean, the Eric person who translated it, is that his, or is that in the text?
I believe that's things he added to make it more clear. Because the original sutra is very old, and it's very difficult. It's driving them crazy. And it's not all, it's not something that's published, but if you had some style things that you didn't like, you can tell me. Okay, move it up.
I just want to apologize also that I didn't have a phone for today. It's typed up, but I didn't get to print it out. So next Thursday, I will have a phone so you guys can call each other and send it to them.
Sasi Bhuti Sushi Meta Kyan Leda Vinci Vide Nyambadi Sagi Shindu Mite Luwadi Yoku Namda Shina Shilpa Yam Guru Rana
One little announcement. If you know, we sent out an announcement asking people, anyone who is going to the last two events down in New Jersey, we sent out a letter, was it 3 months ago or 2 months ago, asking you to call Dieter ahead of time if you needed a place to stay. And I think, I don't know, 8 people called him the night before. He was very upset. And I don't know who it was, but if you're planning to go to this thing in August... I think this list got lost and maybe he didn't get it. So I asked, call him directly. I'll give you his number, okay? It's Dieter, and his number is 908-364-8719. And I think he'd be very happy if people call him this week or next week. Just go home and do it tonight or tomorrow.
Sasi Bhuti Sushi Meta Kyan Rira Vinci Nyende Nyambadi Sange Shindu Mite Uwagi Jokuru Nanda Shingva
Class 2.